A major publisher moves to kill DRM. It's more good news for ebook consumers, but in corners of the industry, fears persist. Will holding on save the business or sink it? Welcome, everyone, to Beyond the Book, Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. My name is Chris Keneally, and every Friday we talk to the editors of Publishers Weekly to get an idea of the news that's gone behind and what's to come ahead. And here in the New York offices of Publishers Weekly, I'm joined today by Features Editor Andrew Albanese. Andrew, nice to see you this time, not just hear you.
Good to have you here, Chris.
Well, this week, the news is all about DRM, digital rights management. And, you know, in the ebook world, there was a big score for consumers not too long ago when the Department of Justice ruled in its price-fixing lawsuit against publishers. But we've got some more news that consumers at least ought to be happy about.
Yeah, that's right. So we all know that the DOJ thinks it scored a big win for consumers with its price-fixing lawsuit. That's questionable, of course. But this week, consumers really did score a win, and it came from the marketplace without lawyers when a major publisher, Tor Books, the venerable sci-fi imprint of Macmillan, announced that they were no longer going to use digital rights management on their ebooks. And this is pretty big news, because this could be the first domino to fall in the eventual elimination of DRM for ebooks published by the big houses. So we've talked about DRM before on this show, usually around columns by our contributing editor, Cory Doctorow, who, by the way, is a Tor author. Cory's pretty strongly against DRM, as you know. And he's been one of the major forces pushing for change in publishers' DRM policies, and I think Cory's words are beginning to resonate. Now, we should note that there are a number of small presses that don't use DRM. There's, you know, Carina Press from Harlequin. There's O'Reilly. Sourcebooks has been experimenting with DRM-free ebooks. But Tor's decision really does signal part of a strengthening anti-DRM movement. Well, I wouldn't say anti-DRM, but move to remove DRM from the major publishing environment. And at the recent book fair, recent London book fair, Matteo Bertolucci of Anobi, which is an ebook retailer based in the UK, actually wrote a piece on our show Daily stating that it was a matter of if, not when, publishers remove DRM.
So what does it all mean? Why would a publisher want to step away from a technology they've invested in?
Well, first, I think there's an acknowledgement that DRM simply does not work at stopping piracy. Critics have long said that DRM won't work. And on the one hand, this is because DRM is usually cracked as quickly as it's released. And on the other, as Pottermore CEO Charlie Redmay noted in his London Book Fair address, the Harry Potter books were the most pirated ebooks in the world without a digital file ever being released. The physical books were what were used to create these pirated editions. Second, consumers hate it. As Tor's Tom Doherty noted, DRM is a constant annoyance to consumers. It prevents them from using legitimately purchased ebooks in perfectly legal ways, like moving them from one kind of e-reader to another. And on that score, publishers have begun to realize, as Cory Doctorow has long preached, that it's really against their interest to use DRM, because DRM does enable these retailers to lock in publishers' customers to their platforms. So removing DRM could, in fact, open up a much more competitive ebook environment. And lastly, you know, this doesn't mean publishers like Tor are going to step back from their anti-piracy efforts. Rather, all this means is that legitimate customers are not going to be punished with crippled ebooks because of some bad actors in the marketplace. And it's worth noting, too, that some studies show that DRM actually encourages piracy rather than reduces it, because users want files that they can use however they please on all their devices. And if those files aren't being made for sale, well, they're going to get them elsewhere.
So as an ebook consumer, I ought to be pleased about all of this.
I think it's good news. Certainly, it bodes for a more open, more robust digital future. And I'll just offer two closing observations on that score. And the first is, what does this DRM-free future possibly mean for ebooks, and especially for all those ebooks that you may have already bought with DRM in the past? Or what does this mean if some publishers scrap DRM and not everyone? Does this mean like a fractured ebook environment? Well, no, not really. In fact, in the short term, it could create opportunity. As Cory Doctorow again has noted, a publisher platform or a retailer or any other program could begin to offer a program like Caliber, which would remove DRM and switch ebooks to their platform. Could you imagine, for example, B&N offering a free app that would liberate your Kindle books as an enticement to switch to the Nook? It could happen if publishers will it. So the previous use of DRM, you know, it may be an annoyance, but it's a relatively minor blip and pretty easily overcome, and really shouldn't delay anyone's decision to remove DRM. And second, I personally happen to agree with Matteo Berlucci that it's, you know, not really a matter of if, but when. And I'll trot out that dead horse of the music industry as an example. 5 years ago, the iPod was in much the same position as the Kindle's in. It was dominating the digital market for music, and still is, I think. But once the first major music company, EMI, dropped DRM, and consumers could buy their MP3s anywhere, within a year, all of the majors had followed suit. And today, the market for digital music is surging. You can buy or get your music anywhere and listen to it on a range of devices. You can move it to multiple devices. So I think Berlucci's right. In his piece, he noted that it took 5 years for the music industry to dump DRM. And he notes that we're right around that 5-year mark now for ebooks, at least in terms of, you know, when the Kindle was released, as, you know, that being a watershed moment for ebooks. So could we see the end of DRM by this time next year? It's not out of the question. And Berlucci also seems to think that removing DRM would vastly accelerate ebook growth, which has been in the triple digits in the last 24 months. So it's going to be interesting to watch what happens at Tor and elsewhere.
Well, and elsewhere this week, this coming week, will include a courthouse, a certain noted courthouse in New York City, where a case that began many years ago in a time really before the ebook revolution continues. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you get the impression that publishing lawyers are very busy these days. Next week, I'm going to be back in Judge Denny Chin's courtroom 11A at 500 Pearl Street, where oral arguments are going to be heard on the Google case, specifically on Google's motions to dismiss and on the author plaintiff's motion for class certification. This promises to be a really interesting day, and the outcome of these arguments could very well determine the future of that action going forward. It's worth noting that we're still expecting some kind of settlement between publishers and Google, but that's not on the table here. This is going to be about the authors and Google's cross motions. But certainly the publisher's piece of this is still on everyone's mind. So you can look for coverage of that next week on the Publisher's Weekly website.
Andrew Albanese, Features Editor for PW. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And joining us now is Rose Fox, PW Reviews Editor, who blogs at Charmerville. Rose, welcome.
Thank you very much, Chris. Always good to be here.
Well, it's good to see you. This time we get to see you in person. We're again live in the offices of Publishers Weekly in New York City, and we'll look at this week's coming reviews in fiction, a title that is a rousing epic tale of the 16th century.
Yes, we have a lot of historical fiction in the fiction section this week. The book you mentioned is Ruler of the World, Empire of the Mogul. This is the third book by the pseudonymous Alex Rutherford. That's actually the husband and wife team, Dana and Michael Preston. And these are rousing epic tales of the Mogols in the 16th century. It's a very exciting book that'll get your blood pumping. We also have Kim Barnes's In the Kingdom of Men. This is an immersive and bracing exploration of one woman's search for freedom amid repression in 1960s Saudi Arabia. And with Dream of the Celt, Mario Vargas Llosa, Nobel laureate and one-time Peruvian presidential candidate, chronicles the short life of Roger Casement, the Irish patriot or, quote, specialist in atrocities, unquote, who was executed by the British in 1916 after the Easter Rising. We think that this author is at his best when writing as a novelist rather than a biographer, and this book falls somewhat uncomfortably and unsuccessfully in between. We also have a Q&A with Southern Californian Dana Johnson about her debut novel, Elsewhere California. In the interview, Johnson says about her novel that she's asking the reader to join me in imagining identities that are far more complicated than we tend to want them to be.
Well, in mystery thrillers, there's a title that just fascinates me. It imagines someone we know very well in a role he probably never had, but it's a striking idea.
That's Francine Matthews' Jack 1939, in which President Franklin Roosevelt hires a Harvard student by the name of Jack Kennedy to be his personal spy. And this imaginative, well-researched mix of fact and fiction follows JFK through pre-World War II Europe as he seeks to stop a courier bringing German money to America as part of Hitler's plan to defeat FDR in the 1940 election. We also cover Allifair Burke's Never Tell. This is her strongest work to date and her fourth novel of suspense featuring New York police detective Ellie Hatcher. When Ellie looks into the apparent suicide of the daughter of a legendary music producer, she finds a rampant subculture of prescription drug abuse and intense academic pressure at the dead girl's elite private school. We have a signature review of Alan Furst's Mission to Paris. This was written by Gail Linz, who was one of the co-founders of International Thriller Writers and Thriller Fest, and she has a lot of very interesting things to say about it. We also have a Q&A with Richard Zimler, author of The Seventh Gate, about a Christian teenage girl's fight for justice in 1930s Berlin, and he talks about what he learned from Faulkner about writing overlapping mysteries. In science fiction, fantasy, and horror, we have two anthologies celebrating the winners and finalists of science fiction fantasy awards. There's one about the Million Writers Award, which lauds work that was originally published online, edited by Jason Sanford. And we also cover Writers of the Future, Volume 28. This is the last work edited by the late K.D. Wentworth, who just died recently. It's not surprising that both of these collect top-notch stories. They're both definitely worth reading if you're into short speculative fiction. We also have a Q&A with Alistair Reynolds about Blue Remembered Earth, which he says is his attempt to do a mid-period Arthur C. Clarke novel under 21st century constraints.
In romance, there's an unusual relationship between two men who also like women.
Yeah, I'm enjoying branching out in the romance section these days. This book is called Colors of Love by Jess D, and it's about a rock band guitarist who wants his fling with the band manager to become something more. The manager thinks the guitarist just needs to meet the right woman, and he's right, but the right woman has her own ideas about what will give the two men the happy ever after they need. We also have a review of Regina Hart's Keeping Score. This is her third basketball romance, and this one shows how even a happy, stable marriage can struggle when one of the spouses is a basketball star being hounded by the media who want to pry into his personal life. In comics, we review Shooters by Eric Trautman, Brandon Jara, and Steve Leiber. This is a thought-provoking graphic novel that looks at the rise of private mercenary outfits in the wars of the Middle East. Our reviewer says it's worth reading, even if you would ordinarily rather do anything else than read a graphic novel about war and warfare.
In nonfiction, there's a title that looks at a hero from the financial world. These days, we don't hear about too many heroes in that department.
It's true. In Volcker, The Triumph of Persistence, William L. Sober leaves no doubt about his view that the world owes Paul Volcker a great debt. He was the Federal Reserve Board chairman from 1979 to 1987, and Sober writes that Volcker did nothing less than restore the reputation of an American financial system on the verge of collapse. We also have a Q&A with Bernd Heinrich. This is author of Life Everlasting, The Animal Way of Death. He says, what's real is always more fascinating and complex than anything in your mind. And in his first book, Twilight of the Elites, America After Meritocracy, MSNBC host Christopher Hayes highlights the implosion of trusted American institutions from the Catholic Church to Major League Baseball, and he traces the origins of the present crisis of authority. Finally, we cover David K. Randall's Dreamland, Adventures in the Strange Science of Sleep. This is going over an enormous range of sleep-related topics, such as the ways that sleeping pills affect short-term memory. Apparently, they don't make you sleep better. They just make you forget waking up. And also the effects of circadian rhythms on the performance of football teams. In the audio section this week, Michael Jaston reads John le Carré's classic Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. This is an excellent new rendition that's packaged to tie in with the recent film version of the novel. And also Tavia Gilbert brings a well-paced, conversational, and chirpy narration to Susan Gregg Gilmore's Looking for Salvation at the Dairy Queen, a Southern fried coming-of-age tale about love, loss, and family.
In the children's section, there's a biography of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, this one's by Russell Friedman. It's called Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, The Story Behind an American Friendship. And it introduces young readers to the relationship between these two central figures of the Civil War with brief, accessible information about the war itself. We also cover Larissa White Ray's The Rock of Ivanhoe. This is a debut novel that began as a bedtime story for one of the author's sons. And our reviewer says its speech rhythms and bite-sized chapters certainly hearken to the oral storytelling tradition. And six books for readers of all ages take a close look at the animal kingdom. In our online annex, Peter Popham paints a sympathetic and well-rounded portrait of Burmese dissident Aung San Suu Kyi in this timely biography, The Lady and the Peacock. And Simone St. James's debut novel, The Haunting of Maddie Clare, is a fantastic paranormal historical set in England between the World Wars. Finally, we have our pick of the week. This week, it's The Age of Doubt by Andrea Camilleri, translated from the Italian by Stephen Sartorelli. And this is the exquisite 14th mystery featuring self-deprecating, passionately foul-mouthed Sicilian policeman Salvo Montalbano. And Camilleri infuses his characters with awkward humanity and everyday sadness that makes them instantly sympathetic.
Rose Fox with our review of the reviews this week. Thanks so much.
Anytime.
We should tell people that Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as now images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/beyondthebook. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.